This is Gareth Southgate, and this is the Three Lions Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Three Lions Podcast. My name is Russell Osborne and this is an independent England football supporters podcast. How are you? Hope you're keeping well. The weather? Ah, do you know what? At one point I thought it was going to start turning a bit nice, but it's just gone back to being a bit damp and dreary, hasn't it? But there's still a little bit of that feel-good factor in the air, isn't there? Spring on the way, getting a little bit lighter in the evenings. And the England games are coming up too. The Brazil and Belgium preview is coming your way soon. But before that, I have another episode in the Your England Journey series. But before we get to that, I hope you enjoyed the recent episode that looked at our eighth England manager, Glenn Hoddle. That was part of our England manager series, a series where I've periodically looked at each full-time England manager we've had over the years. They've all been done in chronological order. It's an ongoing project that takes some time, but I hope you're appreciating them. I'm working on the next one as we speak, but if you've not tuned into the Hoddle one yet, you can join me and Jacob Steinberg. He was the ghostwriter of his autobiography. And you can find it on your podcast provider of choice or threelionspodcast.com. Okay then, back to this episode. I've said it before, say it again. I love chatting with fellow England fans, those with stories to tell, experiences and anecdotes. And when you follow England, we all have those similar experiences and understandings of the places we've been to, the games we've watched or endured. So it's great to relive them. So if you'd like to share some of your stories, then by all means, drop me a note, either on social media or email, threelionspodcast@gmail.com, and we can go from there. So with no further ado, let's catch up with Shrewsbury and England fan, Matt Edgar. It's good times, sad times, fun times, but they are your times. Let's welcome to the Three Lions Podcast for another episode of Your England Journey. A hello to Shrewsbury Town and England fan, Matt Edgar. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Russell. Nice to meet you.
Likewise. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Now, looking forward to discussing all things England with you.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, though. Not England straight away. Put something to bed for me. Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury?
Well, it depends which side of the river you're from. So it would be Shrewsbury for me. It's only the posh people that say Shrewsbury.
Okay, so both are acceptable.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Shrewsbury rhymes with a lot more things when you're putting them in football songs.
Oh, there you go. Fair enough. So what one of those things that I've always wondered about. Anyway, okay, yeah, as you say, let's talk football. Another episode of Your England Journey. Let's start at the beginning. Football in general, where did it all start for you?
Well, football in general started when I was 10. So we had a school trip to the old Gay Meadow to see where our local team played, and it was go and see the changing rooms, and you did a training session there with the community officer, and that's how it all started. Really, it started with Shrewsbury Town, but it was with England. It was shortly afterwards. I think with international football in particular, I got into football, like I say, at the age of 10, which was 1993, and obviously the first World Cup after that was USA 94, and England weren't there. And so wanted to watch it, enjoyed watching it on TV, having got into watching my local team. And loved the, you know, the sights, the sounds, the colours, but obviously no England. So Republic of Ireland were the closest that we had to a home team in that sense. I didn't understand the politics at the time and didn't really care. You know, it was great to see a team that seemed relatively local to doing well, and obviously they did pretty well in that tournament. So watched that, and it was, I had to wait till Euro 96 really to get my first taste of England. And I remember my dad asking if we should try and get tickets. Okay. And I didn't really understand what the Euros were at that point. I'd kind of imagined it to be, you know, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and they were coming to play in England. So I was like, well, you know, why would I want to go and see those teams play when I can go watch Shrewsbury Town? And which, you know, still through to the day. So we didn't look into how you got tickets, and I wouldn't even know how you would have gone about it back then. You know, every time I've watched England over the recent years, it's been in the dawn of the internet when you can go on and you buy your tickets. So we watched Euro 96 at home, and I think that was when I fell in love with the national team. I think that everyone got behind them. You know, I remember the summer of, you know, Three Lions being sung everywhere, and just the excitement, the real belief that we thought we could do something in that tournament and make a final. And, you know, and that heartbreak, you know, I remember, like, kind of when Kupka saved the penalty and Southgate head in his hands, and me similarly, you know, just head in hands on my knees in front of the TV, just absolutely just gutted. But, you know, first of many heartbreaks.
Doesn't matter what age we are, the heartbreak is always the same, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Similar to, I mean, I remember being what I would have been, 10, 12, I guess similar age as you were there for Italia 90, and seeing us smash penalties over the bar and going out to the Germans and, like, head in hands, tears rolling down my face as a 12-year-old. It's and we still do it, I don't know, 30 years later. Nothing wrong with it.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It'd be nice to have tears of joy, though, next time, wouldn't it?
One day.
Well, we'll get to that, I'm sure. I mean, did you ever get to the old Wembley?
So only once. I only ever went to the old Wembley once, and that was with Shrewsbury Town rather than with England. So Shrewsbury were in what was the Auto Windscreen Shield final in 1996. They played Rotherham United, and I was just so excited to be going to the famous old stadium. In our house, the FA Cup final was such a big thing. It was like curtains closed first thing in the morning so that you could have the TV on all day, and the build-up and all that kind of build-up. And when Shrewsbury Town qualified to play, it went for the first time in their history, as it happened. So it was, you know, 1996. It was the first time they'd ever made it. And the fact I could get to go, and it was just such an exciting thing. You know, I remember driving in the car. Well, not, I wasn't driving. My dad was driving. We're going down at the M1 in the car, and, you know, there was lots of cars that you're passing that got the blue and amber Shrewsbury scarves, and then you'd see the red and white Rotherham scarves, because same kind of route for at least half the journey. And it was just start to finish a great atmosphere to the day. And it was just, we got absolutely hammered. We lost 4-1. And again, I suppose it's that, like you say, the disappointment of being a football fan. You always envisage these great day outs and the seeing your team lift the trophy at the end. And on that day, it wasn't to be, but a great trip to the old stadium. And I'm glad that I got to do it before the Twin Towers went.
Yeah. No, lovely old place. Let's fast forward to 2002, the World Cup there, Japan, South Korea. What were your memories of that?
So that was the first one, really, that I remember watching kind of as an adult. Mm. France 98, I remember watching, and I had a cousin actually that was an England supporters club or England fans member, as it was in those days, and went to the France 98 and brought me programs back and things like that. And so 2002 was the first World Cup that I watched as an adult, and I'd not long started uni at that point. I'd moved to Derby. My brother was living in Derby at that point as well, my brother Gary, and we met up in a bar to watch. I remember the Argentina game specifically, absolutely packed, and there was some there was like a big screen behind the bar, and there was some stairs in the bar, and everyone was stood on the stairs watching it, and obviously Beckham got the penalty. We won 1-0, and I just remember talking about how cool it'd be to go and watch England, and I suppose, you know, again, it just never really thought anything of it. It was, you know, it's something that you watch on TV. It was really cool. But it was not long after that that went to my first kind of in-person game. So again, got my brother Gary to thank for that. My dad's birthday is in September, and he bought tickets for England v Liechtenstein at Old Trafford. Obviously, at that time, 2003, I think it was, the Wembley Stadium was closed for the rebuild. So England were on the road, and so he got tickets for my dad for his birthday, and for me and for him to go to Old Trafford to see England play Liechtenstein. And you know, it's not what you could call a glamorous game, is it? Liechtenstein, yeah. But you know, we won 2-0, and from watching Shrewsbury Town, and I mean, I've never been massively impressed by the celebrity of watching England. It's always been about the better football and the bigger stadiums and the better atmosphere and all that kind of thing. But the first time you watch England and Owen and Rooney score, Beckham's the captain, you know, and you're used to going to stadiums where you've got 3,500 people and watching people that, you know, never amount to those standards. And it was just a great, great, great experience. And I loved it.
It's hard not to be starstruck, I guess, really, when you say those sort of names, Beckham, Rooney, Owen.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All great players of that era. So that was your first actual game in the moment, going to see it live. Oh, was that the last time we played Liechtenstein? Maybe. Can't remember off the top of my head.
Could well be.
Chances of playing them again are probably few and far between, unless we get them in a qualifier, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it could well be in the World Cup qualifiers, couldn't it? So
could well be. Well, you perhaps you'll be able to do the reverse fixture for it, maybe, when it comes around. I imagine. Be a small allocation, that one, I reckon.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
So 2004 came round, the Euros there in, where was that? That was Portugal, that's right. And you went to that, didn't you? Your first tournament.
So that was my first tournament. So again, you know, really lucky, and again, driven by my brother. So I was just finishing university at that stage. So I just had my 21st birthday the previous February, and my brother, his wife and his two kids were going to Portugal. They've got a villa in Lisbon, and said, you know, why don't you come along? And he'd managed to get four tickets for the England-France group game, the second group game. So that was kind of my graduation present, which still blows me away. And it was just elevating that experience again, because I mean, taking just the game itself, again, you talk about being starstruck seeing Owen, Rooney and Beckham, but then to see a tournament game and you know, Zidane was playing for France that day, Henri, and you're 1-0 up against them. You're 1-0 up. Lampard's put us in the lead, and you know, and then Beckham missed a penalty. And I must admit that it was a real struggle when Zidane scored those two goals, stoppage time goals, because you've got my brother and I there that were like kind of just loving being England fans, and we're really heartbroken by the fact that you know, we'd lost the game.
Yeah.
And then the other two people that were with us were like, oh, isn't it amazing to see Zidane at his best and, you know, tearing a team apart and winning the game? And I was like, no, it's not. It's not great. We want to win the game. And we were in the 90th minute and we were 1-0 up. So yeah, with the benefit of hindsight, to have seen Zidane live and in the flesh, you know, great privilege. But I just wish he'd have kept quiet for another couple of minutes.
Don't we all? If only, eh? Oh, but it wasn't enough to put you off, though, was it? That was probably the start of
That was the start, really.
Involved now.
We'd got lucky with getting, you know, these tickets for the Euros, and it was at that point that we were kind of like, well, we now need to figure out how we can do this. You know, this was just lucky getting those tickets. So how do we try and take the luck out of it? And so it was kind of after the Euros in 2004 that I signed up to the supporters club. And so started doing more and more home games. And of course, you didn't get caps for home games in those days. I think it was 0 caps for a home game, 1 for away back then.
Okay.
And so so Denmark away in August of 2005 was my first proper away game, if you want to call it a proper away game, because the tournament matches aren't quite the same, are they?
And no.
It was a day trip, I think, we did to Copenhagen, and we'd set off ridiculously early in the morning, and we'd landed, kind of headed straight into town, kind of seen everyone in those squares, all the flags up, and thought, well, everyone's having a beer, we might as well have a beer. So I had a couple of beers, but also conscious that we didn't want to be like drunk going to our first game, wanted to savor the whole thing. So we kind of had a bit of a break from it early afternoon and went for a bit of a stroll in the sun and the Tivoli Gardens there. Went for a wander around there, and remember just like kind of lying on a patch of grass in the gardens, like looking up at the bright blue sky, sun beating down, had a couple of beers, but it'd been a long morning, just having a bit of a snooze, to be honest. and then heading to the game later on. And the funny thing about that game as a first away game is we got hammered. We lost 4-1. They scored 3 goals in 7 minutes. Really killed the game off.
Yeah.
And I came back, and particularly talking to my dad about it, like, you know, saying to my dad about what a great trip it had been, what a great experience it had been. And he was like, how can it be a good trip? We got beat 4-1 by Denmark, you know. How can it be a good trip? And I think that was kind of the start of, you know, not just it being just about the football, about being about the traveling, about the trip, about being, you know, being away for the day and being part of that atmosphere. And obviously we all hope to get a better result than a 4-1 defeat when we do it. But even with that, that was kind of the start of it.
Nice one. Yeah. We've got to take the bad with the good, haven't we? It's just unfortunate that you're started with a France defeat and a Danish defeat as well. Some might say that, oh, should he keep coming?
I'm sure that there's a victory somewhere around here.
No, take my hat off to you to keep going. But yeah, you went there, and by which time it was sort of qualifying for the World Cup. Germany World Cup was coming around, wasn't it? What were your memories of that?
So I got really into it and tried to do as many games as I could. In fact, kind of post Copenhagen, I think I only missed one game, and that was Northern Ireland away.
Wow.
In the run-up to the World Cup. And that was purely because I couldn't get a ticket. It was such a low allocation, as you'd expect in Belfast.
That was the one we lost, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think we did, yeah. So it's not always me that's the bad luck.
There you go.
But yeah, so I'd been starting, even though it was my first campaign as a member, I'd been going to as many games as I could, starting to build up enough caps. And whilst it didn't guarantee me tickets to all the games in the World Cup, it got me a couple. I got tickets to the Sweden game, which was the third and final group game. And then I got a conditional ticket for the round of 16.
Okay.
But the only problem at the time was that, you know, I wasn't long out of university. I'd still got loads of student debt and I hadn't really got started on a career as such. And I got the tickets, but I just couldn't afford to go. I just couldn't afford the travel to get out there. And so I was trying to, I'd seen on the forum in those days, didn't have a Facebook page in those days, it was all on the fans forum. I'd seen a couple of people running coaches, seen that there was nothing kind of going on in my local area. And so so I approached a local coach company and said, how much would it cost me to do day trips there and back for each game? And so I took the punt on it and I booked them. Had to pay up front for them, had to borrow the money to put it down. So it was a massive, massive gamble at the time.
How old were you thinking about then? Were you about 24, 25, were you at the time?
So I would have been 23, yeah.
20, fair play. Wow.
So, but I was so confident, you know, and I spoke to a few other people. Sharon Atkins was doing coaches at that time down from Bristol Way, I think. So I'd spoken to other people that were doing this kind of thing, and I kind of felt, well, you know, all I've got to do is fill the coaches, and then I travel for, because that's what I did it for, right? I did it to travel for free. I didn't make any money on it. I did it to travel for free. And so I took a punt on it, and I started off selling the tickets for the coaches at like £70 return,
right?
And that was the break-even price, right?
Mm.
And then it got to the Sweden game. I'd done the first two group games, and the coaches were full. You know, broke even, happy days. Didn't have tickets, but I went to the fan parks and just loved it. The fan parks. You know, it was a glorious summer in Germany that year. The sun beating down. All the different fans of different countries together in one place in the fan park. You could have a beer, you could watch the football, and it was just absolutely brilliant. It was a really good atmosphere. But then the Sweden game was the third group game, and that's the one I'd got a ticket for, but it was a dead rubber, and no one was interested. And I had about 25 or 30 people going on the coach, so I lost quite a bit of money on the second coach. So then from that point on, I put the price up to £100 return to try and make profit on the next ones to pay for the lot.
Half of that. I've heard these stories before.
Yeah. So you know, obviously we then went through to the round of 16, and we had Ecuador in Stuttgart, and we won that. So that's what I was at that we won. So it's not always been bad luck. And then ultimately, obviously, the quarterfinal. And the quarterfinal, I think I'd got pre-booked maybe 10, 15 people on the coach. And my phone was ringing constantly all the way back to England. And in the end, I took 100 people.
Did you? Wow.
So I had to ring the coach company and get them. Can you get me another coach? Can you get me another two drivers? Can we make it any way to make this work that we can do two coaches? And so we took 100 people to Gelsenkirchen for the quarterfinal, and I loved it. I really enjoyed doing it, having gone from a position of, you know, it was Gary and I, my brother, that were doing the games, to then suddenly, you know, you talked to Stuart Franklin a few weeks ago and I met him through those coaches, and you know, the number of people you met that all had this same love of watching England and of travel and of going and doing it. And it was just a really, really amazing tournament. So I did five return trips to Germany in 3 weeks, and I was knackered, if I'm honest, but I loved it. And I just remember being so just gutted after we lost. I couldn't believe that we'd lost. And I can't remember how long the trip was back from Gelsenkirchen. I probably imagine about 18 hours or something. And I slept the whole way. I got on that coach and I slept because I was just drained.
Imagine.
Such a big build up to it, such a stress, but then such an amazing experience. And then, just exhausted mentally, physically, just, shattered.
Yeah. Well, I've seen people do coaches for England games. I've been part of helping someone with a coach for games. So yeah, take my hat off to anyone that puts in the time and the effort and stumps up the money initially for these coaches. So yeah, nice one. No, 23. I can't get over that. It's amazing.
Yeah, obviously young and stupid.
Wow. would you do it again?
Do you know? I don't know. I thought you might. Like you say, I take my hat off to those who've done it and do it. And I've used those supporters, coaches all over the world that other people have put on. And it's an amazing thing that people do, but it is hard work. It is hard work. It is stressful. And it is a lot of responsibility. You know, you've got to make sure that when you get there, these coach companies are reliable and that they're going to get you there safely and that they turn up and, you know, and that you don't leave people behind and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's hard work, but good fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 2006 came around. I think a significant moment happened shortly after that World Cup, didn't it, in your life?
Yeah. So, not long after the World Cup, I met my now wife, Nicola, and you know, that was kind of my opening gambit to her. You know, I love football. I love travel. I've just come back from Germany. I've just been doing the World Cup and went to the Euros 2 years ago. So, you know, this is what I do. So, you know.
Was she impressed?
No, she's not. She's not a football fan at all. She did give it a go for a while. I think our first Valentine's together was Boston United away with Shrewsbury Town. So she gave that a go. They weren't very glamorous matches going away with Shrewsbury. So, well, I'll give those a miss and then started with a couple of the England games. So one of our first big holidays together was we did the Andorra and Croatia doubleheader in 2008.
Oh, yep.
So kind of promised that we'd get the balance between holiday and football as best as we could. So we went and stayed in Salou in Spain and just traveled to Barcelona for the day of the game against Andorra. And we, you know, did a bit of sightseeing in Barcelona, had tapas. And then in Croatia, she was quite keen to see Dubrovnik. I'd been to Dubrovnik in 2006 when England played there against Croatia then. And just done Zagreb both times as day trips. So we did that. And we stopped in Dubrovnik and we did the 600-kilometer drive to Zagreb in a day. Stayed over there, went to the match. And of course, in 2008, that was the one where we won 4-1.
Right.
So that was probably the best match I'd been to away. Yes. It was to win 4-1 away at Croatia.
Theo Walcott, I think, wasn't it? With his game.
Yeah. Mm. So it was a really, really good night. And then, except for the fact that when I drove back to the hotel that night, I decided to stop at a McDonald's drive-thru because I was hungry and I lost my wallet at the drive-thru. So,
oh, dear.
Other than that, you know, it's fine. Got the cars cancelled and everything, and then headed back the next day and did one of the national parks in Croatia, and it all just kind of helped to reinforce that. Yeah, the football might be a couple of days or even only a few hours of doing these travels, but that you can. It can take you to places that you might not otherwise go, that you can have experiences that you might not otherwise have. And I think that kind of opened the door for everything afterwards, really. Because like I say, when I met her, I said that I love travel, love football, and there's two places in the world I want to go more than anywhere else, and that's Cape Town and Rio de Janeiro. And as luck would have it, the next two World Cups are in South Africa and Brazil. So
as if you'd thought that through.
So I thought it through, but genuinely, Cape Town and Rio like the two places that had been on my list since I was a teenager, long before they were given the World Cups.
Yeah.
So it was one of those, I suppose, that I wanted to try and figure out a way of doing those places when the World Cup was on, because I thought that just adds something to it. So meeting Nicola and trying to convince her that we could do the travel and still have the holiday that she as a non-football fan would enjoy, so that when it came to those big trips that were going to obviously extend the budget a little bit, that could convince her that we'd still get out of it.
Yeah. Well, they came around, didn't they? So you booked up for South Africa then?
Yeah. So again, my naivety, I was so desperate to see a World Cup final. It's a real bucket list thing for me to see a World Cup final. Even if England aren't in it, I'd love to go. And I was now in a relatively good position in the caps table, so could pick and choose my games. And I applied when we were both members at this point, so we could both apply for tickets. So we both had conditional tickets for the semi-final and the final, and decided that we'd just go out for the last week of the tournament.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, in hindsight, not the best decision I ever made.
It's weighing it up, though, isn't it? Any tournament like this, it's so expensive to think, right, I'm going to go from the first group game to the final. We'll dream of seeing us go through. But realistically, there has to be a line drawn, and unless we're all rolling in it.
Yeah, well, going for 4 or 5 weeks has never been an option for any tournament. So I've always had to pick and choose. And
yeah
on that tournament, we decided to just to chance it and be there for the semi-final and the final. Because if you'd have gone and then come home after the group stage and then they'd made the final, we just wouldn't have been able to get flights back out there. So that was what we did. We had 5 days in Cape Town around the semi-final, and then we had a day in Johannesburg around the final, and then we went off on safari, which was the condition from the wife. Well, she wasn't the wife then, but from Nicola to agree to the trip. So we were in Cape Town on the day of the Uruguay-Netherlands semi-final.
Okay.
And the atmosphere was just amazing. It was just absolutely buzzing. It was just really great to be a part of. So despite the fact that my conditional tickets had probably already been refunded by that point, you know, I had no chance of going to the game, but still really felt like I'd been at the South African World Cup, because you got all that atmosphere in Cape Town that day. So that was a really great experience. And then World Cup final day, the night before, we traveled 18 hours overnight by bus from Cape Town to Johannesburg.
Right.
Got there World Cup final day, and we went to the stadium. I was desperate to go and see the stadium, but as they do often now, they had these kind of multiple perimeters so that you couldn't get that close to the stadium. So we could see it from a distance. Bought a few programs back for my nephews and niece, and it was great to go and see it, but it just really rubbed it in that, you know, it was my bucket list thing to go and see a World Cup final, and I'm here. I'm stood outside the stadium, and I can't get a ticket. The tickets are changing hands for silly, silly money.
Mm.
And the biggest frustration was at the time, I worked for a brewery, and I knew that the top guy at the brewery had got tickets, corporate tickets.
He was inside.
No, he didn't go at the last minute, so his seat was empty.
Oh no.
So there on World Cup final day, I don't know, maybe the seat got reallocated to someone, but certainly I know that the top guy wasn't there.
Seething. Well, let's say your partner then, Nicola, you weren't married there, but marriage was on the cards, and obviously if any marriage comes, a stag do. What was the what was the plan for that one? I hear.
So I've got to be really quite thankful to my friends with this one for putting up with some of my crazy ideas. But so we got married in 2013, and so I decided that for my stag do, we'd try and do the double header between England and San Marino in the March, followed by Macedonia. So both away. So that night, that week, we went down to London on the Thursday night, quiet night in London, you know, just a bit of curry and a few beers.
Yep.
And then we flew to Bologna in Italy on the Friday morning, picked up a big people wagon type thing, and drove down to Rimini, set up base in Rimini for the night, got a taxi into San Marino and went for some food and went to the match out in Rimini that night. Next morning, got up and drove down to Rome. Had a night out in Rome, dropped the car off.
How many of you were on this stag do?
So it waned. There was kind of seven of us throughout, but some people just did Rome, some people just did Rimini, some people just did later on. So there was different numbers at different times. So we did the flight from Rome to Belgrade in Serbia. Did two nights there, and I'd done that route last time we played Montenegro a couple of years earlier. Flown to Belgrade to get the cheap flights, and then there's a beautiful but frustratingly long 11-hour train journey from Belgrade to Serbia, from Belgrade to Podgorica.
So
we all got up a little bit worse for wear on the day of the game in Montenegro and had 11 hours to travel by train. Got there, went to the game, and then straight onto a coach from there that a guy called Steve Olcott had been running. That took us to Dubrovnik in Croatia to get a flight home. So then we had a bit of a rest and then had to go out on Thursday for the suit fittings and do some actual proper jobs and then kind of meet up with some of the guys that hadn't been able to travel out for all the games.
Lovely.
So we were out seven nights, seven countries, you know, did UK, Italy, San Marino, Vatican City, which I am counting as a country.
Why not?
Yeah, it's just my match there though. Serbia, Montenegro, and Croatia. And the funny thing about being in Belgrade the night before was that Scotland were playing Serbia in Belgrade on the same day as we were playing. So yeah, we were surrounded by all the Scots. So we were there, like going to watch England, and we were probably the only England fans there. But there was a load of jocks.
Top stuff. I bet that got a mention in the best man's speech, did it?
Yeah, well, it's like Nicola has always said, how I ever persuaded that many people to do that long a trip when it was just, yeah.
Good stuff.
Very grateful.
Great. I want to just jump back a year because like you, I went to the San Marino and the Montenegro games. But a game I also went to, which it seems that you went to as well, was the infamous Poland game in Warsaw. But it seems you got a bit more of a result than I did. Tell us about that one.
So again, still in that phase of trying to convince Nicola that we can combine holidays with football. So we'd planned to be in Warsaw just for the 24 hours or so, and then get the train down to Krakow and have a few days down there. So we got there late, kind of just before the game, about an hour before the game, and we got absolutely drenched just getting from where the bus had dropped us off to our hostel. And so we just dropped our stuff off and headed straight off to the ground. And yeah, it was just bucketing it down. It was like nothing I've ever seen. And we were absolutely drenched. And we got to the stadium, dripping wet through. And the match, we'd already missed kickoff, but obviously they hadn't kicked off. And we went up to the upper tier and the water was kind of pooling into the recess at the front of the upper tier and kind of waterfalling over into the lower tier. And we just looked at each other and she looked pretty cold and miserable and wet and I didn't feel much better. And I just thought, there's no way this game's going ahead. And even if it is, you can't sit here for 2 hours this wet because you're just going to be ill for the rest of the time away. So we didn't hang around in the stadium long. We made the decision just to cut our losses and head back. And of course, it was the right decision in the end because the match was eventually called off. But like you say, I was quite lucky because we were there for a few days. We were supposed to be getting the train the next morning and then they rearranged the game for like mid-afternoon, I think it was.
Yeah.
So we were able to just delay our train a bit and get a late train down to Krakow and catch the game. So we managed to catch the game, which was a bonus. And then because I think everyone who was out there and had got a ticket was then invited to a training session at St. George's Park.
So I don't remember this. I don't remember getting the invite.
Well, we definitely had one, and obviously we live close, Derby. It's not far from St. George's Park, and we got the invite there, and we went to and we met kind of Roy Hodgson and some of the players like Ashley Cole, James Milner, Michael Carrick, Geraldine Lescott, and it was in the final run up to our wedding at this point, kind of a year out from our wedding. So we kind of got all the autographs and then put them in frames and stuff. And then that was our thank you gift to my nephews for doing a reading at the wedding. Aww. So my three nephews, Nathan, Arthur, and Theo, did a reading at the wedding, and as a present, they had signed pictures of some of the players.
What a great present! Oh, I bet they loved that.
Yeah, well, they certainly seemed to. So, and it was cheap and free.
Oh, but what they've didn't know until now. Oh, lovely! If I'd have been that age, I would have been made up. Let's fast forward. Like a few years now to Brazil, the World Cup there, another place that you said, yeah, that's on the bucket list. That's what I want to go to. How did that all fall into place?
So, like I say, Rio was the place I wanted to go more than anywhere else. But having learned what I'd learned in South Africa, where we didn't catch a game, I was a bit more risk averse this time, and thought, well, let's plan to go during the group stage. And what we found in South Africa was that they seemed to really want the tourism and the business, and they really wanted you to come and have a brilliant time so that you'd go back and tell everyone and you'd want to go get time and time again, and that it would really be a boost to their tourism industry. Whereas Brazil, they thought, right, everyone's coming, let's make as much money out of them as we can while they're here, because they're never coming back.
Right.
And so consequently, it was just really expensive in Rio. We had the most horrible kind of little hostel in not the best area of Rio. And we kind of landed, having flown direct from London, but got off the plane and went and chucked our bags in this horrible hostel. And we literally had about 2 hours between getting off the plane and then getting on a coach, because England weren't playing in the group stage in Rio. They were playing in Sao Paulo, which was, I think, 5 or 6 hours down the road. So that was one that Mark Griffiths on the Ball Travel sorted. So, yeah, we got off the plane, dropped the stuff, got on the bus. So got into Sao Paulo kind of early hours of the morning. It was an overnight bus. And just had the day to have a bit of an explore and a wander around. But we were just shattered. And then the tickets we had were the Uruguay game, which was the second group game. And obviously Suarez scored two either side of a really goal. And that was England's World Cup over. So we'd already left Brazil by the time England played their final group game and were coming home.
Dear. The dream of going to a World Cup final lives on.
Yeah, one day, yeah. Maybe New York.
Oh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, after seeing those some of those stadiums that have been picked, New York and America is going to be certainly an interesting one. And as you say, like, I went to South Africa. I didn't go to Brazil, but yeah, I understand what you mean about sort of them wanting you to come and sort of embrace the culture and see it. But having not been to Brazil, I didn't get to see that side of things, unfortunately. But that is a country that is still well on my bucket list one day.
Yeah.
But do I want to say fall out of love with football for you, or is that not the best way?
It's difficult because, so my eldest daughter was born in 2015.
Okay.
And I don't know how much of it is, I don't know, emotional or physical or whatever when you're having a baby, but yeah, 2014, after the World Cup, I kind of really did fall out of love with it. And there was two trips in quite close succession that stick in mind. There was Estonia away and then Scotland away. And Estonia away we'd done a really nice trip, actually. We'd been to Riga on the Saturday night, and then we were playing in Estonia, Tallinn on the Sunday, and then we were flying straight back from Tallinn. But the plane back was full of some just really rowdy and badly behaved England fans, and I just thought, I don't want to be around this. This isn't, these aren't the people that represent me and who I am. And yeah. And it really put me off. And then, you know, only a month later, then we went to Scotland, and I didn't see any trouble, but you know, being marched down the road by the police after the game to keep you away from the Scotland fans.
Was this the Celtic?
I can't remember actually.
I remember being walked from one game in Scotland, and Celtic comes to mind.
It might have been Celtic Park. But yeah, we were walked away from the stadium and skirted away from the city centre, and it just felt like you were being treated like a criminal. Mm. And you know, I've never, touch wood, been involved in any trouble. I never want to be in any trouble, and to be treated like that by the police. And I just thought, this isn't what I do this for, you know. So having those two bad experiences in quite quick succession, it really put me off. And like I say, you know, maybe it was also the fact that my first child was on the way, but it was kind of enough to make me think that I'd pack it in. And I didn't go again, home or away, after Scotland in, I think it was November of 2014, for quite a while. I did a few tournament games. So I went to the Wales game in France 2016.
Yes.
And that was a really proud game for me, because as a Shrewsbury Town fan, Joe Hart, local boy, came. I saw his home debut for Shrewsbury. He actually made his full debut away from home, but I saw his home debut for Shrewsbury, and he was lining up for England. Dave Edwards, another local lad, lining up for Wales that day. And at Shrewsbury Town to this day, they have the shirts of the two players up in the offices. It's a really nice thing that they've got up there. That it's when you support a little club like Shrewsbury, to have two homegrown players that grew up together playing at the Euros against each other, and one of them for your country. That was a really special moment, really. So I enjoyed that, and I still enjoy the tournaments. But even then, France, we did the Wales game was in Lens. It was a place that we could just drive to easily as a day trip and do it. And it was only the week before that there'd been all the trouble in Marseille with the Russian fans, and it did nothing to dissuade me, really, that my decision about packing it in was the wrong one. And so, whereas after Brazil 2014, I'd rejoined, and that's why I'd managed to get tickets for Euro 2016, because I'd got enough caps carried over. After Euro 2016 and the trouble in France, I decided I'm not rejoining. That's it. That's me done. And so, I really genuinely thought that I was. I really genuinely thought that I was. And I remember the run up to the Russian World Cup, and you know, obviously, I've been to the last three World Cups, and Nicola kept saying to me, "Are you really done?" And I'm like, "I'm done. Not going to. There is not a chance I'm going to Russia." It was the Russian fans that were causing trouble in France.
Yeah.
Feels dangerous. It feels unsafe. I disagree with the awarding of the World Cup to them when we should have had it. We should have been hosting it. And, you know, and I felt really quite bitter about it. And obviously Southgate had not long taken charge. And there was just, at the time, no real excitement around the England team. It just felt like, even if it was just purely based on performances on the pitch, that had given you nothing to have hope for. But
until
it just started going all very well, didn't it, Russell? Yeah. It all started to click into place. And, you know, you've probably got from me today that it's a real, real bucket list thing to be at a World Cup final. And when we beat Sweden in that quarter final, I was like, this is it. This is my chance. Because, of course, for Russia, you have to have a visa to get into the country.
Yeah.
Couldn't just rock up at that kind of time of day. It was too late to get a proper visa. The only way you could get in is if you had a match ticket, and if you had a match ticket, that came with a visa. So I spent all day the day after the quarterfinal victory over Sweden on the FIFA resale website, just refreshing, refreshing, refreshing. And I initially got a ticket for the third place playoff. That was what I first got. And I was like, right, that's a visa. That's a visa. That gets me into the country. And then within a couple of hours of that, I managed to get a semi-final ticket, an England semi-final. So that was it. Booked my flight. And I went to Moscow, and I honestly can't think of many goals that I have celebrated like Trippier's free kick. Yeah. Like, to be there, feeling all very surreal, like this time a week ago, I wasn't going to Russia, and I'm now here in Moscow, in the stadium, and we're 1-0 up in a World Cup semi-final against Croatia, who I've seen us beat 4-1 in Croatia.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, I'm feeling pretty confident, and all of the guys around me, you know, there were seemed to be a load of people that had done the same thing. It was all people on their own, because it was all single tickets that had obviously come up relatively last minute, or that bought off touts or whatever. And when that goal just went in, the way that everyone was celebrating together, like you'd known each other for years, when really everyone was complete strangers. And it was just, yeah, it was euphoric. It was absolutely incredible. And it just still feels like such a missed opportunity that we didn't see that game out, because we could have beat them. We really could have done. And, you know, whilst it was an amazing experience, and, you know, I spoke to people when I got back who were still really gutted several days later. I said the one thing that I was really pleased about being in the stadium was that the England fans must have stayed behind in that stadium for an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours after the whistle, and they were singing everyone's names. The players came out one at a time. Southgate came out, and we just celebrated the fact we'd just been in a World Cup semi-final, and the atmosphere went from one of dejection to one of celebration of what an overachievement compared to expectations, and what an incredible thing it was. And it was it. Although ultimately disappointed in the result, the experience in the evening was kind of just, yeah, incredible.
So did that relight the fire again, did it?
Yeah, well, I think, funnily enough, I went to see the Dear England play.
Fantastic.
And it was on in the cinemas the other week. And just reliving some of that and what Southgate has really brought to us. And whilst, you know, I know that the ultimate proof is whether he can take us that next step and all that kind of thing. And I know he's got his lovers and his haters, but I think back to how I felt about following England. And part of that was the team. It's got to have been.
Yeah.
And how that has changed over his tenure, and how we can get excited, and what he's delivered is, you know, a World Cup semi-final, a Euro final. It's been amazing. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be at that Euro final as well. I was quite lucky with tickets throughout the that Euros. I'd actually got the Euro 2020, as it was supposed to be, yes, the final through the UEFA ballot. So I having had this bucket list thing of seeing a World Cup final, I'd got at least a Euro final. And so didn't necessarily believe it'd be England, but, you know, it thought it'd be an amazing thing, and it'd be at Wembley, and it'd be a great experience to do it. And I was lucky enough, I think, to do five of the games in that tournament. And, you know, seeing us beat Germany, that semi-final win, and, you know, it was just incredible. But yeah, ultimately, again, just fell a bit short, didn't we, in that final?
Yeah, unfortunately so. Yeah, strange times, but. Yeah, it was, yeah, good, but just not the one. So, I mean, we sort of moved towards Qatar then, don't we?
Mm. Well, I think before going to Qatar, it's worth saying that post the men's Euro final, I just so enjoyed, other than some of the elements of, you know, crowd trouble and stuff at the final and semi-final, the men's Euros was such a great thing to have in England for the most part, that then started getting the emails from the FA about the women's Euros the following year.
Yeah, of course.
And I'd been to a couple of Shrewsbury Town women's games when I was younger, but I'd never really followed, you know, the women's football as much as the men's. But I came back from the men's Euro final, and my daughter's now kind of 6 years old and asking me, well, when can I come to football with you? And the women's Euros was priced really well to encourage families to go. And as an England fans member, I had access to the ticket. So I bought tickets to three of the games, two of the group games and the final. And, you know, again, just thought, well, we'll see how it goes. And my daughter, before the tournament, like I say, she'd been asking to come to matches, but, you know, her bedroom was unicorns and rainbows and all that kind of stuff. And then by the end of the tournament, it was Beth Mead and Millie Bright. And, you know, just the way that she fell in love with it. And I must admit, I mean, it just blew me away. You know, the whole tournament, the atmosphere, the sport, there are a lot of misconceptions about the women's game. Yeah. And it really winds me up and frustrates me to hear, you know, when we see it, especially on the England Supporters Forum, you know, we are an England Supporters Club, not an England Men's Supporters Club. And I think that the Lionesses have done an incredible job of providing great role models. And fundamentally, you know, I stand by that Ella Toon's chip in the final against Germany is up there with one of the best goals I've seen live. It was an incredible finish in such a high pressure game. And, you know, we won the trophy. We won the tournament. My dream right from a kid was to be able to sing Queen's We Are the Champions when your team has won it. And Shrewsbury never given me that. And the England men's team have never given me that. But on that day at Wembley, the Lionesses it was incredible. And like I say, my daughter is now hooked. I still can't get her convinced on the men's football. She's not convinced on that, but she loves going to watch the Lionesses. And we've been to quite a few now. We've done a few since then. So I think that's been a really positive change that they've, you know, that's the living proof of the change that they were trying to achieve, which I'm glad to be a part of. Love it.
As a father of a daughter of a similar age, I know exactly what you mean when you say that, about like these role models who came after the game and all of a sudden they're talking about your Beth Meads and Leah Williamsons of the world, Mary Earps as well. No, I totally... Wow. Totally understand where that's coming from, and long may it continue. The World Cup last year was on our telly, getting into it.
Switzerland next year for the Euros, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've already said about, well, you know, maybe we can do a day trip somewhere.
Yeah,
well, may see you out there. Well,
Qatar was just, it was a bizarre one, wasn't it? Did you go, Russ?
No, it was one that a multitude of reasons that I didn't go. I mean, the obvious ones that people said about, but I mean, it was just sort of financially as well and the time of year for me. But you decided to make the go of it.
So we went to Qatar for a weekend, my brother and I. And we went through the FIFA ballot, and we had the Friday night and Saturday night quarterfinals, which were the two options for if England won the group or came second and made the quarterfinals. So either way, if England were in the quarterfinals, we'd got a ticket. So as it transpired, the Friday night match was the Netherlands-Argentina match, and the Saturday night match was the England-France match. So got there early hours of Friday, went to the fan park for the day, watched the Brazil-Croatia match in the afternoon. And the fan park was a really bizarre experience because I'm a firm believer that these tournaments need to have their own identity, and you wouldn't want to just pick up the German World Cup and put it in Qatar. That wouldn't be right. It needs to have its own identity. But they had this this compare that was coming on, and they'd do bits of entertainment, and they had like a daytime disco and all this kind of stuff. And about 15 minutes before the match, everyone just sat down cross-legged.
For the locals.
Yeah, absolutely. all the locals just sat down cross-legged in front of the screen. Like, this compere just seemed to start getting really quite upset about it, saying, oh, this is a health and safety violation. Everyone needs to stand up, otherwise we'll start sending the police in to eject people. And we're just kind of, what's going on? So eventually everyone stands up and they play this really bizarre song, which I think was the song of the tournament or something, or the song of the fan park. But as soon as the song finishes, like, right, can everyone sit down now, please? So then everyone sat down cross-legged on the grass to watch the match at the fan park. It was just
strange.
Weird. It was really weird. But, you know, I guess that's a cultural thing, you know. Yeah. And like I say, you just wouldn't want the World Cup to be picked up and dropped somewhere. It's got to have its own identity. And it certainly did have that. And so we went from the fan park to the Netherlands-Argentina game, and my brother wore an orange shirt just to, you know, to show team colours, support the Europeans. And the stadium must have been 95% blue and white. We really, whenever I've seen the Netherlands on TV at tournaments, they take such a great following, similar to us, you know, really bring the party and, you know, vibrant colours, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think it was 4,000 from the Netherlands there. It was all, they reckon, or someone was telling me while we were there, that there was 35,000 people from Argentina in Qatar. And all the locals were adopting Argentina because of Messi.
Messi.
So it was all blue and white. So when, and it was a really feisty, bad-tempered game, Argentina were 2-0 up and obviously drew the game 2-2. It was a last minute equaliser that very clever free kick in the last minute that equalised the goal. And it was just a surreal experience. It was a really great game to have been at as a neutral. And that just further added to my love of the World Cup, really, because I'd never been to a match as a neutral before. I'd seen so to go to a match and see Argentina and Netherlands as two great teams in, you know, the last eight, and yeah, it was a really great experience. And the next day it was Morocco, Portugal, followed by England, and the Moroccan fans were bringing so much atmosphere and sound around, you know, one of the souks in town. It was, it was just all noise and drums and singing. And it was just incredible to witness, because obviously they were just partying for the fact that they were there, you know.
Yeah,
it was,
of course.
And you had every reason to believe that they could be going into the semi-final. So that was a great day. And then, you know, obviously the England-France game, what can you say about it? It was, we just didn't do enough, did we, on the day? You know, it was ultimately disappointing, and you can point at the missed penalty, but I don't think we really deserved anything out of the game on the day, and we just kind of let the World Cup peter out.
Yeah, and France are France, aren't they? I mean, a quality side. And saw us off. I mean, you could say, yeah, we had a few chances in that game, but yeah, ultimately we didn't take the main chance. And who knows what would have happened after, had we have scored the penalty? They could have gone up the other end and scored.
I mean, yeah, we'll never know, will we?
Never know. So yeah, another World Cup that we didn't make. Or World Cup final we didn't make, and one that you didn't make there. Where was the final for that? Was that Lusail Stadium?
Yes, it would have been, yes.
So did you get to see that one, or did you stand outside that one and gaze at it?
Just there for the weekend. Came back on the Sunday, having been to the two games, and didn't have to worry about broaching the subject to going back the weekend after. But I think it's another thing that just draws you back in, that it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? And this last campaign, having, like I say, had a couple of years where, well, a number of years where I stepped back from it. This campaign saw my first away game away qualifier for 9 years. I went to the Ukraine game in Wroclaw.
Ah, yes.
And again, it just really reinforced everything I loved. I was quite nervous about it because I'd booked it relatively late. I got a ticket in the second chance sale. And I'd spoken to a guy called Paul Dennis about getting his coach, but he was fully booked. And I just said to him as a throwaway comment, don't worry about it. Don't put me on the waiting list. I'll probably just hire a car and drive it. And he just messaged me back saying, well, if you're going to drive it, will you let me know? Would you be willing to take some guys with you? Because I've got a waiting list and, you know, they'll chip in for the car hire and the petrol and I'll put you in touch with them. And like I say, I was a bit nervous about it given
yeah,
some
understandable
I'd had before, but you know, I met up with three guys for that: Gary Taylor, Dan Fox, and Joel Lamping, and we shared the cost. Never met them before, and we just got on like a house on fire. We had a great chat in the car, talking things England. Got there, and we were going to go our separate ways, but we ended up spending all day together and going to the match together, and obviously then traveling back together. And you know, we've been in touch since, sharing ideas about what we're doing for Germany, what we're doing for, you know, the Nations League games in the autumn. So it's great when you get to meet people like that and you get on so well that you can then start to plan future games together and look forward to the future, because Germany, I think, is going to be an exciting one. I think it's going to be a really, you know, really good time. I talked about the fan parks and the sun in 2006 and, Yeah, I just can't wait to get out there this summer.
There's plenty of us all feeling exactly the same, looking forward to getting out there for those finals. What are your plans for it? Have you got tickets for?
So got all the group games, but at the moment I've only got the first one really planned. So we're going out to Frankfurt for the weekend. I'm going to drive up to Gelsenkirchen for the Serbia game. Just make the most of being out there for a few days and, like I say, watch games on the big screens and enjoy it. And yeah, I don't know about the other games yet. I don't know whether to do, you know, drive it, to fly, you know. I'll probably do a mixture of all of the above, to be fair.
Yeah. Exciting times, and well, maybe I'll see you out there.
That'd be good, Russell.
Tickets for a few. I know obviously Gelsenkirchen was what you said about where you had a coach from. Well, that was Portugal, wasn't it? So hopefully it doesn't
Portugal
bring back
game, yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't bring back similar memories and no sleeping on the way back for what, 18 hours or so or if we are, it's a joyful journey back.
Yeah, sure it will be, and it can't be that bad for the first game, can it?
no, that's right. Well, here's hoping for a good summer, Matt. Thank you very much for your time. Really enjoyed it. Really appreciate it. I think many people can understand what some of the stories there and think, yeah, I done that. I recognise that too. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Russell.
Many thanks go to Matt there. Enjoyed that one. Now, if you'd want to get involved and share some of your stories of following England, either home or abroad, then please do get in touch. Always enjoy chatting. Just find me on social media or by email, 3lionspodcast@gmail.com. And before I leave you, just a quick plug for the Ko-fi account. If you'd like to help contribute to the hosting of the podcast, then you are more than welcome. Just head to ko-fi.com/3lionspodcast. Any donations are gratefully received. And as I say, they just go towards the monthly hosting of the podcast and also the web domain. So let's leave it there for the time being. I will be back with you very soon, finally taking a look at our first men's game of the year. It's the preview to Brazil and Belgium. I hope you can join me for it. And if you stay subscribed, you won't miss it. Until then, take care of yourselves. Cheers.